Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
So we're into pre-season and Liverpool have got a game under their belt. Not the perfect result against Man United, but plenty of players getting some game time. Bangkok gave the Reds a massive welcome. And next up is Singapore. We'll take a look at pre-season and take your questions in the mailbag special. I'm Steve Hothersall. This is The Red Agenda with James Pearce, who is half the world away with the Reds. He's on the other side of the globe. How are you, James?
I'm good, thanks, Steve. You okay?
Yeah, very good indeed. We were just talking before the pod and you were just saying how mad it is when you travel there for pre-season and all of a sudden experience that, you know, that reception that the Reds fans out there have given the team.
Yeah, I think I've been fortunate enough probably to come on. I think this is my fourth trip to Asia following Liverpool, but you know it had been a little while, and it just kind of opens your eyes again to just how fanatical the support for the club is in this part of the world. Yeah, just amazing scenes, you know, being at the team hotel, the St. Regis in Bangkok yesterday, and just proper Beatlemania with the hundreds and hundreds of fans outside screaming every time they got a glimpse of their heroes, and you know, some of the meet and greets that the legends have done across the city in the last few days. You know, so many people queuing up to meet and to have a picture taken with, you know, Jason McAteer and Jose Enrique and Sammy Hippier as well. And, you know, and of course there's the community side to this trip, as well as the commercial side with, you know, the LFC Foundation staff who do a fantastic job, you know, leaving a legacy with the sessions they put on for kids. So yeah, apart from I think what happened on the pitch, which I think I'm sure we'll come on to, the first leg of the tour was certainly successful. I think it ticked a lot of the boxes. You know, a lot of Thai Reds had a smile put on their faces. And then I'm a few hours ahead of the team at the moment. I got an earlier flight from Bangkok to Singapore, just settling into my hotel here, and then Liverpool. I think the training in Bangkok before flying in early evening Singaporean time today, and then, you know, the preparations will be cranked up for that second and final friendly, the tour against Crystal Palace here on Friday.
You see, I can obviously see you on this recording method we're using. You look pretty knackered, to be honest. So you wonder how the team are dealing with all this as well, don't you?
I can't even blame double sessions, Steve. I haven't been doing any running in this heat. It's bad enough walking, to be honest, but. You know, it was interesting. I did an interview with Billy Hogan actually a couple of days ago that will be on the Athletic in the next few days, and he was talking about, you know, the importance of striking a balance on trips like these between, you know, clearly Liverpool have a huge global fan base, that there's a commitment there, especially post COVID, having not been able to tour for a while, that they have to go out. There's also clearly, obviously, you know, financial benefits to be had in terms of, you know, the sponsorship and the partners that they can, you know, kind of secure on trips like this. But also, you know, the other side of it is of getting that balance right with the football side. So, yeah, I think that's why it's a bit manic, this trip, because, you know, clearly Jurgen Klopp and his staff don't want to be away for too long. They fly straight back after the game on Friday. So it's, you know, it's pretty much bang on a week, even including the travel. You know, I think from speaking to people around the squad, it's gone pretty well so far, and you know, certainly having all those legends here takes the heat off them a little bit in terms of the commercial commitments.
Yeah, definitely serves a purpose, doesn't it? Let's get on to this game against Manchester United. The scenes inside the stadium looked ridiculous, to be honest. It looked like a cup final. How did it feel sort of pre-match? What was the attendance there?
Yeah, just over 50,000 in what was a 60,000 seater stadium. Yeah, which when you think of it, the tickets were certainly not cheap. You know, you're looking at £100 up to about £500. So it was, you know, it's that, you know, that clearly for a lot of Thai fans, it just wasn't a realistic proposition for them. You had another 30,000 who had bought tickets to watch the game in cinemas dotted across Thailand as well. They brought in two of the biggest pop stars in Asia to do a proper, almost Champions League style pop concert on the pitch before the game, and you had the PA announcer whipping the locals into a frenzy as well. Yeah, when you come out here, it's everything around the game don't really feel like pre-season friendlies, because I went outside the ground after the press conference to speak to a couple of Thai Reds, and it just reinforces what it means to them to see Liverpool in their own home city, because Liverpool hadn't been in Bangkok for 7 years, and of course most of the time they're getting up at silly times to have to watch the games that are going on back in the UK and across Europe, and so to for them, most the ones I spoke to didn't really care less about the result. For them it was the buzz of seeing their heroes so close up.
Yeah, absolutely, firsthand. I mean, these games are all about fitness, aren't they? We know that it's right at the beginning of the schedule for the Liverpool players. It is a fixture that probably came much too soon for Liverpool. You look at Manchester United, you think Ten Hag clearly wanted to make an early statement with one of his first games, given the troubles that United have suffered.
Yeah, I think we should probably not be surprised, knowing what social media is like, but I was a little bit baffled by some of the comments that I saw when I was reading some of my mentions on Twitter going back to the hotel late after the game, because you couldn't get a more irrelevant result than that. I know it's Manchester United, and of course you never want to lose to them, but there's nothing whatsoever that can be read into that. You look at Ten Hag's starting lineup, and that was a starting lineup that could easily be a Premier, it probably has started a Premier League games in terms of the experience. And United, have been back a week longer than Liverpool. They're for their non-internationals, they've been back a fortnight. Their internationals have been back a week. For Liverpool's international contingent, pre-season started on Sunday night when they got to Bangkok. So I don't think Klopp had any other option, really. People will say, did he really need to use so many players, 32 players, 10 teenagers? But I think if you rewind 12 months, he did exactly the same. If you remember when Liverpool started last pre-season, the difference then was, because of course it was all behind closed doors, it was actually two 30-minute matches against, I think it was Innsbruck and Stuttgart, because on the sports science side of things, that is what they think is best, not to throw players in too soon and to build up the minutes gradually. And certainly afterwards, Klopp said he had no regrets. I mean, I think you look at the goals, and of course Liverpool gave away some horrendous goals, but then you look at where the mistakes came from, and they came from players, with the greatest of respect, won't be anywhere near that team when the serious stuff starts next week. And it wasn't a great surprise that Liverpool looked transformed in the last half an hour when you look at the names that he chucked on. And there were positives to take from it. I thought Carvalho was really lively in that opening half hour. Only the post denied him a debut goal. You can tell he's a really intelligent footballer, the ability to pick up, find himself in little pockets of space, and gets his head up quick and always looking to advance the ball. And there's the same for Nunes. I think, again, like he's only had a couple of sessions with the team, and I was there for the open training on Monday when he actually came off early because he had blisters all over his feet. So it was, it's not the perfect start for him. And, yes, would have been lovely to have seen him tuck away that chance late on when he fired over. But I think we still saw enough to see, especially you look at Robertson and Alexander-Arnold, both of them, I thought you could see how they were both eager to pick him out. And you could see those runs in behind, using that pace and power of his. At times they weren't on quite the same wavelength. But again, that's what pre-season is all about, isn't it? To fine-tune that. So, and certainly for some of those young players, like Luke Chambers and Isaac Mbaye and Bobby Clark, guys like that, they'll never forget an experience like that, playing in front of 50-odd thousand in Bangkok. And I think anyone that pays any attention to pre-season results, it baffles me, to be honest, because I remember being at Murrayfield and seeing Liverpool wallop 3-0 by Napoli 3 years ago. I think they'd lost a couple of friendlies before that as well. And, They went on and they got 99 points and won the Premier League title by an absolute mile. So I think you will see a different approach from Klopp to the game against Palace on Friday here. I think we'll probably, with an extra few days training, you know, maybe we'll see more players getting 45 minutes rather than 30.
Yes, there was essentially three different 11s playing 30 minutes apiece, wasn't it? But it was great to see lots of those players you mentioned. I suppose the future of Liverpool in Carvalho and Harvey Elliott, two former Fulham players reuniting again. You know, if you could fast forward 5 years and you wonder where those two might be, that's an exciting prospect, James.
Yeah, it really is. And I was speaking to Harvey Elliott actually in the mix zone area after the training on Monday, and he was raving about Carvalho and what he will bring to the mix. Of course, he absolutely loves the fact that they've been reunited at Liverpool after their days in the youth section together at Fulham. So there's obviously been a lot of talk, hasn't there, about do Liverpool need to go and buy a midfielder? You know, are they one short in that department? You know, Klopp was asked about that the other day, and he was, you know, he delivered a very like robust defence to the point where he said he just couldn't fathom that this was a discussion that had been going on. He'd actually been told that it was a discussion and said, well, you know, and then reeled off all the options he's got. And I kind of see both sides of it, because I can see the argument that, well, hang on a minute, you know, Thiago was sensational when he was fit last season, but he still missed a third of the Premier League games. The argument being that obviously Milner's now 36, Henderson's 32. But I think where people probably underestimate what kind of clicks with Klopp is how much he's prepared to rely on those young players this season. You know, I think for a lot of fans, it's probably, well, we don't really know what we're going to get from Elliott, Carvalho and Curtis Jones. But Klopp's answer to that is, well, he backs them to deliver and he wants to give them the opportunities and he wants the pathway to be there, rather than to block it by bringing in someone else, you know, effectively just for the sake of it. Because I don't think, it's not like he's blind, is it, to the possibility of bolstering that department, because we know that they were keen on Tchouaméni before he went from Monaco to Real Madrid. We know that, you know, they're very keen on Jude Bellingham, but we also know that that's just not a possibility for this summer. That would be one potential one for next summer. So Klopp, he couldn't have been more positive about the options he's got. And Carvalho's a big part of that. And I think Klopp loves the fact he's versatile as well, the fact he can play in the front three, he can play in an advanced central midfield role. You know, same with Elliott and Curtis Jones as well, really. And and I thought, talking of positives from the United game, I thought, you know, Harvey Elliott is definitely in that bracket. You know, I think he had a tough time, didn't he, when he, you know, obviously to come back from that really serious injury last season. You know, and I think that happens quite a lot, where a player comes back from a serious injury and initially they're kind of like, the adrenaline gets you through the first few weeks, maybe the first month, and then kind of maybe a few aches and pains, reality kicks in a bit and you find it a lot harder. But Harvey Elliott was telling me that he really worked hard through the summer, lost weight, feels like he's in the best shape of his life, and certainly from the feedback from the coaches so far is that that they've been really, really impressed with Elliott, and they think he's got a big role to play this season.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Let's go to the mailbag. So plenty of questions coming in. And lots of them talking about the midfield, or also the balance of the side and different options in terms of formations. Steve, you just answered this, but Steve Williams said, do you think we've got a balanced squad now? maybe a defensive-minded midfielder light. But with our attacking fullbacks and brilliant centre-backs, do you think we'd ever go 3-4-3? Now, there's a lot of questions around formation and what Jurgen might do this season, particularly with Darwin Núñez coming into the side. We didn't really see anything change within that first game against Manchester United. What is the expectation as things unfold, James?
Do you know, I think the big thing for Klopp is I think he sees the changes this summer as the chance to make Liverpool more unpredictable and more difficult to analyse and plan to try and stop. Because, you know, certainly when you look at the options in that forward line now, you know, he has the ability to mix it up, I think, and really keep opponents guessing. I think I don't think we'll see him completely move away from 4-3-3, because I think, you know, you look at it at the moment, and I think a lot depends on how the next few weeks go. But you think Diaz on the left, Núñez through the middle, Salah on the right is absolutely mouthwatering. But, you know, he has also got, I think the thing with Núñez coming in, because he is he's so different, isn't he? We've almost so been used to having a false nine rather than a proper nine under Klopp. I think with his skill set, it gives you the chance to be a bit more direct at times, to get in behind teams, you know, quicker. And I also think it gives him the option of playing 4-2-3-1, because he's certainly not short of players who could play as a number 10 with, you know, Firmino can certainly do that, Jota can do that, Carvalho can do that. So yeah, I think that's the big thing for him. You know, Klopp was talking about how, you know, for a long time it was quite set, wasn't it? You know, it was, you know, Liverpool's front three is Salah, Mane, Firmino. And then we obviously saw Jota initially kind of break up that front three. Then we saw Diaz make a sensational impact in the second half of last season. And now with Núñez coming in, that changes it again. So I think just Klopp sees this as a, you know, the next stage in the evolution of Liverpool, because we know he's always looking for that extra few percent. And, you know, the last thing he wants is teams to know exactly what they're going to be getting with Liverpool.
You see, even if he's going to change things, he doesn't want to affect the brilliance of his side as well. And Holden asks a question here. He's talking about Mo Salah, and he's saying, you know, he's obviously always played on the right wing, if you like. But if they change the formation, he's saying, does it in any way affect Salah's output? Because clearly he's still the main man in terms of goals. But if you got a number nine that you're playing to, is there an expectation that it could change Salah's output?
No, I don't really see why Núñez coming in would have a detrimental impact on Salah. I think clearly it's going to take time for them to establish that understanding, because, you know, obviously Salah and Mane knew each other absolutely inside out, didn't they, from the sheer number of games they played together over the years. But I think Salah in a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3 can be equally as effective. You know, I think there was, you know, the injection of quality into that game against Manchester United, you know, after Trent Alexander-Arnold and Salah came on down that right-hand side was instant, wasn't it? Some of the interplay between them. So I don't see that being an issue. I think the big unknown at the moment is, you know, can Núñez replicate what Diaz did in terms of, because, you know, usually we always talk about, oh, you know, you need to cut, you know, a player some slack coming from another country, you know, not knowing the language, having not played in the league before. But kind of Diaz, you know, ripped that up, didn't he, with his impact from January onwards. And, you know, the hope is that Núñez can do the same. But, you know, of course, this is a crucial period in terms of, you know, not only getting to know, you know, people in the setup at Liverpool, but, the way that Klopp wants him to play. I know Klopp feels like there are parallels between, you know, the situation with Diaz, where, you know, there were similarities between the way that Liverpool and Porto played that helped Diaz when he came in, because it wasn't a case of having to change too much. They didn't try and overburden him with tactical details. It was almost go and do for us what you did for Porto, and that worked a treat. And Klopp was saying that, you know, that in a similar way, that they want Núñez initially to just do what he did for Benfica, for Liverpool, and then over time, of course, they can tweak things and tailor it to exactly what he needs tactically. So I think the hope is that should certainly help the adaptation process. But of course, everyone's different, aren't they? I think it'll be, you know, of course, we don't know yet whether, you know, will the fee, you know, be, you know, sometimes players, when they come for huge money, that feel added pressure as a part of that. We don't know that yet. And of course, you know, a huge move for him from, you know, the scrutiny and the spotlight that he's going to be under at Liverpool compared to Benfica. But, you know, we also know from watching him last season that he's an unbelievable talent. You know, again, Klopp was saying that what he really loved when he sat down with him to discuss the possibility of a move to Liverpool was that how much he wanted to come. He said it was refreshing, the fact that it wasn't a case of, well, you know, well, thanks for your pitch, I'll get back to you. It was, yes, 100%, I want to join Liverpool. You know, he was blown away by the experience of playing at Anfield with Benfica in that Champions League quarter final, and he wants to experience that on a regular basis. And I think the support network at Liverpool helps. You know, I think that was certainly a factor with Diaz as well. You know, because again, Diaz, like Nunes, barely spoke a word of English yet. You know, you've got the Spanish and the Portuguese speakers who went out of their way to help him. And certainly, judging by this trip, from what I've seen so far, you know, Thiago is certainly one that seems to be, you know, with his arm around Nunes at various times. And I'm sure that is a big help when you're trying to get used to things after, you know, such a life-changing move.
Yeah, the expectation levels are so high. I mean, you talk to Liverpool fans, they simply can't wait to see him. I know you haven't caught up with Mo Salah yet, but it'd be interesting to know whether Mo feels there's a bit of pressure that's come off his shoulders now that whole season-long conversation about his contract has gone. Because he's only human, James. He must have been feeling it himself. And all of a sudden, that burden doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. You'd like to think that there will be a knock-on effect to that. That is really positive for him and for Liverpool, because I just think one of the things I was dreading when, you know, we'd got into middle of June and there was no updates, and you know, I wrote that piece not long after the Champions League final, where again, you know, speaking to people close to Salah, saying that, you know, he was desperate to stay, he wanted to stay, but you know, the big thing for him was getting a contract that he felt was properly recognised his status in world football, and if he didn't get that, then, you know, he would consider his options and was even open to the possibility of staying in the Premier League. And, you know, and obviously if he was to leave on a free agent in 2023. So I think it's huge, the fact that has been lifted. And what would have been a distraction, you know, throughout pre-season into the new season. You know, we know that whenever, you know, Salah doesn't do much media, but whenever he did do media last season, of course, it was the first question on everyone's lips. You know, what about the contract? You know, what's happening? So I think, yeah, for him and for Klopp and the club, that's probably, you know, the biggest bit of business Liverpool have done all summer, bringing that to a successful conclusion. And, you know, I think for him as well, you know, I think he would have been reassured by the show of ambition in the transfer market, the fact that Liverpool were so decisive to go and get someone like Darwin Nunes once they knew that Sadio Mane wanted to embark on a new challenge. Because, you know, as much as Salah embraces being the main man, and, you know, clearly, you know, he loves, you know, the adoration that brings, I think he also knows that his personal and team goals are more likely to come to fruition if he's surrounded by, you know, elite talent. And I think, you know, when you look at that front line now, it's pretty mouthwatering, the damage they could do to defences this season.
And the Liverpool squad just looks brilliant, doesn't it? Connor asks, how's Jurgen going to utilise the 5 sub rule given the squad he's got? We can see how happy Jurgen is about this decision on 5 subs.
Yeah, I think it's just a bit of a game changer for him in terms of when it comes to rotation, because I think we saw it in the Champions League games, didn't we? When he doesn't want to push players through 90 minutes after 90 minutes, you know, when the schedule is intense, it gave him that option. We saw it in the Champions League quite a few times, didn't we, where he'd make 3 subs at the same time, because I think he had such faith in the depth of the squad. There was a number of games, I think about probably Inter Milan away was a good example, where that injection of fresh legs and, you know, new ideas, you know, completely changed the game. And I think he'll certainly embrace that in the Premier League this time around, because I think that was always a thing previously, wasn't it? You know, when you only got 3 subs, he'd be thinking, well, you can't really change things too much, because for a start, you've pretty much got to hold one back anyway, because, you know, the possibility of losing someone to injury. And I think, especially as we said before, it ties in as well with being able to hurt teams in different ways. And I think the five subs thing, you know, means that if, for argument's sake, you think about some of those draws that, you know, if Liverpool had turned to wins last season, you know, the title race could have been, you know, would have turned out differently. You know, at times it felt a bit samey in terms of the questions Liverpool were asking of teams. And then I think with the attacking options he's got this time around, being able to shuffle things to a greater degree, you know, with 25, 30 minutes to go, yeah, I think that can only help, especially when you look at that depth as well. But anything that becomes about, you know, means it's more about a squad game, that should play into Liverpool's hands and help them with the, you know, the array of options he's got.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Marbub, I think I've said that correctly, Marbub says, what would be a successful season trophy-wise for the Reds, given the campaign that we've just been through and the closeness they got to the quadruple? So what actually is a success? How are we going to be feeling come the end of the season if they won, for example, say, one trophy?
Well, I think if that one trophy is either the Premier League or the Champions League, I think there'd be absolutely no complaints. I think, last season, I mean, ultimately a strange feeling, wasn't it, the back end of last season, because, you know, for so long, it looked like they may well pull off, you know, what people thought was absolutely impossible. You know, no team had ever extended a quadruple challenge, you know, as long as Liverpool had. And, yeah, to miss out on the Premier League title by a point, and then, you know, really, when you think back to the Champions League final, and, you know, in many ways, the outcome almost paled into insignificance because of the shocking things that fans had to endure off the pitch that night. But, you know, just purely on the pitch, Liverpool really should have beaten Real Madrid. So you think, you know, another major trophy, you know, got away from them. Yeah, you know, you can't be critical of a team that, what was it, 4 defeats in 63 games? And one of those was a completely meaningless defeat. I think it was at home to Inter Milan, because they still went through on aggregate. So yeah, they produced breathtaking consistency. It's just, I think Klopp knows that you can't stand still. You can't, you know, you have to look for ways to change, to evolve, to improve. If you were being ultra critical, you'd say that certainly in a number of games, some of those drawn games, they could have been more ruthless, could have been more clinical, could have controlled games to a greater degree. You know, I'm sure those are things that him and the analysts have pinpointed and are working on. So, it's difficult, isn't it, to say what is a successful season, because I think no one could say that last season wasn't successful, yet it didn't yield one of the two trophies that obviously at the top of your list when you embark on an adventure like that. So, you know, if Liverpool can go through the whole season only losing 4 games again, then, you know, that'll be some effort. We just hope that, you know, that leads to one of the big ones coming back to Liverpool. Because I think that's the thing, like this manager and this squad that he's built, they have only still got that one Premier League title. They've only got that one Champions League, and they've, you know, they've come agonisingly close to adding to that. But to really cement their legacy and Klopp his legacy, you want to see them go on and win the biggest prizes again and again.
I mean, even without winning one of the two main ones, it's a season that's raised the bar yet again, hasn't it? Let's just dip in for two more quickies on the mailbag. Chandler says, which reserve player, so presumably means academy players, have the highest potential in the first team? I mean, obviously, we saw a few yesterday that we won't even see this season. But which are the ones that you're really thinking they're going to be making a bit of an impact throughout the campaign?
Well, yeah, of course. I think Cade Gordon isn't on this trip due to injury, but I think they're hoping to get him back fit in the next couple of weeks. And we saw a glimpse of Gordon, didn't we, in the cups last season? And I think you know, they've got real big hopes for him. There are some really gifted kids coming through. I think you know, Bobby Clark, who got a run out against Manchester United, the son of Lee Clark, he's certainly worth keeping an eye on. You know, the same with Luke Chambers, the fullback, who again was involved against United. And I really like Lesagic, the I think Liverpool signed him from Celta Vigo just before the rules changed about not being able to buy players under the age of 18 from overseas clubs due to, you know, Brexit coming in. You know, he's kind of moved from being a kind of a centre back into a holding midfielder, and Stefan is a, you know, he's someone who the staff, when you talk to people at the academy, you know, that they think he's got a real chance. You know, whether that leads to a, you know, a domestic cup outing or whatever this season, I don't know, because, you know, as we touched on before, Klopp has got so many options. But yeah, Stefan's definitely one to keep an eye on.
Right, final one from Born Red, who's just talking about the Anfield Road expansion and the whole Anfield regeneration, and obviously it's looking amazing. You probably can't answer the question. He's saying, do FSG have any more plans to further expand, which we wouldn't know right now, but, you know, just a thought on what it looks like. I walked past the Anfield Road the other day. I was thinking, wow, this really is turning into the best stadium in the league, if it isn't already.
Yeah, it does look incredible the way it's coming together, and on target, time wise and on budget, to be opened in just over 12 months' time. So there'll be no summer concerts at Anfield next year, as obviously in the closed season, they'll need machinery, I think, on the pitch to obviously connect the new structure to the old structure and get to work on the kind of the final phase really of the rebuilding of the Anfield Road. But yeah, it's going to be great, isn't it? I think we all know how difficult it is to get hold of tickets, and you know, the fact that, you know, they're adding another 7,000 seats to take it up to 61,000 is just going to add another layer, isn't it, to the atmosphere we get treated to so often. And in terms of further expansion, it is something I've asked numerous times to the club, and the answer is pretty much no, that they don't think there is really the potential to go further than that. I think people obviously say, well, what about the Kenny Dalglish stand, what about the Kop? But I think, you know, from what I've been told, the sheer cost that you'd be looking at for what is potentially, you wouldn't really been able to add that much. I think just because of the confines of that area, in terms of obviously the houses and the road and all the rest of it behind the Kop. So I think, you know, going back many years now, it was always phase one, phase two, wasn't it? Phase one was the main stand, phase two was the Anfield Road. And yeah, I certainly don't think, I don't think we'll be seeing a phase three, certainly not anytime soon.
It's going to be impressive when it's finished. Thanks for all the questions on today's mailbag. James, absolutely superb. Thank you very much indeed. Don't forget, if you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, you can read all of our articles on Liverpool, everything on the site. Head to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. Right now, a special price, £1 a month for 6 months. Just head to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. Thanks for listening to our Red Agenda, and thanks for your questions. We'll see you next time.